through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
A Thursday edition of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We have a terrific show planned for you today.
Almost kind of like a Friday edition.
Yeah, it's a Friday for us.
It is, because there's going to be a Mariner game tomorrow. Take that for however you want. Hey, by the way, do I need to give out the disclaimer every day that we have a great show planned for you? I mean,
yes.
It should be implied by now.
Well, I think we should also be honest when we're like, guys, it's not going to be our best.
Yeah, this we may just sleepwalk through this one. Well, I don't want to ruin the greatness of the show by, you know, saying that.
I'm excited for this one.
Nevertheless, it is going to be great. We are going to speak with Danny O'Neill, who is down with Paul Gallant at Mariners spring training, as I point like in a southerly direction here.
You're not even pointing southerly.
I'm not.
You're pointing toward,
it's that way.
Toward west.
Yes.
So he's going to join us. We'll talk a little Seahawks with him too. Mike Sauk in at 12:30. But this morning when we all woke up, we got some what I would call non-news on Jadeveon Clowney from Josina Anderson, essentially saying the same thing that we've heard all along, which is that he hasn't been led in any one direction. He likes Seattle, still wants to play for a contender. But as we were talking about that this morning, a very real and hard-to-deal-with question came up. What would life be like without Jadeveon Clowney next year? Every conversation we have about a free agent that may or may not come in here, and LJ Collier, how does he fit in? All of it is predicated on Jadeveon Clowney being here.
Right.
Well, and it's part of an interesting conversation. So let me read the exact quote that Josina Anderson has from Clowney for you guys before I say my kind of impression of it. So this is his quote. After spending the last year in Seattle and seeing how they do things, I would definitely like to return. However, I'm also open to new opportunities if it comes down to that. And he's going to get some callings for other opportunities. He will probably get the richest defensive contract on the market, right, Jake? Yeah, I mean, that's what everyone's kind of expecting. And he said after the season, he wants to play for a contender. He also, they do, you know, exit interviews with most of their free agents anyways, but he did go up. He thanked John Schneider for being there. John Schneider has talked about that conversation. By all accounts, he had a great year here. So there's certainly interest. If you don't get that just from him telling that to Josina Anderson, get it from the interviews that you've heard from Pete Carroll and Dwayne Brown after the season on with Bob David Moore, saying, you know, there's nothing more I can tell him. He had the full experience. So it was a good experience by all accounts here. But there will be other teams that come calling. And if they're a contender, what he sees is a contender, and if they're willing to offer him $23 million, $24 million a year, how high is that going to get? Seattle might be out of it.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what this market goes for Clowney, because very interestingly, he is without question the top pass rusher, the most sought after pass rusher on the market for free agency right now. Now, having that disclaimer by Clowney saying that I would like to return to Seattle to me is actually very positive. He could have just said, you know what, at this point, I enjoyed my time in Seattle, but I'm really looking at every opportunity just as seriously.
There's no reason to say that, though. Because,
no, there isn't. There isn't a reason to say it.
I mean, why wipe them out of the running?
Well, you wouldn't wipe them out of the running, but I think that he put an extra little something on Seattle that, hey, I would really like to return back to Seattle, but I'm open to the other possibilities.
Yeah.
And so if it comes down to dollars and cents in terms of, you know, hey, we're $500,000 off from where we want to be, I feel like that's in the favor of the Seahawks. But if it's larger than that and the Seahawks have their number wherever it is, let's say it's $22 million, let's say it's $23 million, and it ends up ballooning to 24, 25, I think that that's where you can lose Clowney. And to go to that eventual question, what would life be like without Jadeveon Clowney here in Seattle? It would be scary. It would be very scary from the sense of that Clowney, what you know that you're getting from him is a known commodity to you, to your organization. Although it's only been a year, You know exactly who Clowney is, his personality, how he fits into your scheme, the abilities and capabilities that he has. And if you lose Clowney, now you have to jump into a free agent market where maybe you get a, you know, a couple splash signings, a couple big names that you feel really good about. But it's still a gamble in the sense that you don't know how they're going to transition. For every Preston and Sedarius Smith that you see in Green Bay, there's also another list of guys that signed big and didn't pan out at their respective places that they signed with. So it is, there's more of a risk going with the unknown rather than going with the known commodity of Jadeveon Clowney, who also is a top-tier pass rusher.
Yeah, and now remember, next week we're going to go through our available NFL free agents, right?
Yes.
Okay.
So starting on the 2nd.
So at 2 o'clock every single day, we'll be talking more specifically about some of these guys that are out there that are available, not only at the DN position, but all positions. You know, I saw Brian Baldinger do one of his Baldy's breakdowns on Twitter. It was last night, and it was of Jadeveon Clowney's game at San Francisco. I think he called it the best performance out of a defensive end that you'll see all year long, and it really was that good.
Yeah.
But I started trying to – I mean, you can always point to that game, and objectively speaking, it was phenomenal. But the entirety of the year – he didn't perform that way every single game.
He didn't. What I would say is that that was the injury in which he suffered the core injury that he had. So you wonder what he would have looked like. You know, were you just hitting your groove with this team? And, you know, would you have taken off had you not been injured? Because it's also your first year in a 4-3 base defense. And, you know, you're switching from where you were like kind of an outside linebacker. Jake would know more about his role with that team, but there were some new kind of responsibilities you had in this defense, and you had a chance to rush a little bit more and to be a little more loose.
Yeah, look, and I'll just say this right now. I think Jadeveon Clowney is the most talented and best available pass rusher that one can buy at this point. My only worry, and look, anytime, just think of it this way. When you're making an expensive purchase, whether it's a car or a house or a guitar or something like that, anytime you're forking over that kind of cash, there's always a little worry that goes with that. It's like, okay, I know I want this. I know it's probably going to improve my lifestyle or whatever I need it for. But there could be, if something goes wrong, it's going to be a huge drawback. That's how I feel about Jadeveon Clowney. I know he's the best for my situation, and I'm prepared to cough up that kind of money. But the problem is, to this point in his career, he's really not had an entire year of the dominance that you would expect at that price. That is my biggest worry with this.
And there are people that are fine with paying that. But you saying that is, it's not what John Schneider said, but he did say when asked about the team's cap space, they have about $59 million in cap space. This is what he had to say during his press conference at the Combine the other day.
What? You get tired of me talking about it, but it's a landscape thing, right? Trying to figure out exactly, you know, like at this point last year, I thought Frank was going to be on our team, right? So it's really like a daily or weekly process of figuring out how you're going to put this thing together. And, you know, we have some cap flexibility this year, which is great. But it's not just about this year, too. It's just planning for the, you know, next year and the following year as well. We have to be cognizant of where we're going.
Curtis gets in my headphones after that. I remember my first time playing sound. It's not my fault. This computer is slow. But you got the point. All of you guys listening heard what you needed to hear, which was John Schneider saying, look, we have great cap flexibility this offseason, but you have to worry about 2 and 3 years down the line. I think this team would love to have Jadeveon Clowney back. I think what you also have to consider, though, is when you sign him back and you agree to a long-term deal, you're agreeing to spend minimum $20 million essentially per year, and as it gets later in his deal, probably a little more per year. And so you're, I don't want to say you're mortgaging the future, but anytime you have a long-term deal for a star, that will forever be a part of your cap that you have to account for over the term of that deal. So when I heard that, I thought they are certainly considering who they commit to and how that might restrict them in coming years.
And it's got to be tough to walk away from, especially when this guy is your own player. I mean, what if he was a free agent to be with another team? right now. Let's say he was with, I don't know, Philadelphia or something. And since Seattle was in the same position, they needed a pass rusher, an elite one. Would they look at him the same? Would they be ready to pony up that money in the same way they are right now, given that he's in their uniform?
That's a good question, because I think with the Seahawks, it's a little more for them. This is not their normal route. I think if they were presented with this with an outside player, unless he was that dominant player like Khalil Mack, every game you felt like you could count on this guy being dominant in terms of the stat sheet and that 49er game, for example, that you pointed to, Clowney was very disruptive, and that's where they love him. That's where they go back to the film and watch the tape, and they see it from a different point of view than the average fan, and they say, this guy is worth this money because of the disruption that he creates. But I think that they would shy away from that, but because they've had the intel and that they've seen him up close and personal, that they're more comfortable giving that money to him. Also, the reality of it, too, is their defensive line, without Clowney, they're in a very tough position. And now you're looking at it going, you are starting from scratch, absolute scratch on your defensive line, instead of having a guy that you feel like you can build your defensive line around. So it just changes your approach in a very, very, very quick way.
Problem is, as Stacey said, can you build anything on a defensive line when you commit so much money just to one spot?
And technically you can, but it's a good question. I want to revisit this later in the show because I love this debate.
Just one quick thing. To answer that question, Khalil Mack, I'm looking at his contract right now. 6 years, $141 million, a 23.5 average salary. Well, the way that you get around that is you pay upfront money. You give a big signing bonus guarantees. So Khalil Mack's cap hit in the first 2 years was almost 13, 14. In 2019, it was 12. And then after that, it starts ramping up towards the back end of the contract. So that's how you can get around of it. Frank Clark, his deal last year, he signed a massive deal. His cap hit to the Kansas City Chiefs, at least in year one, was only $5 million. So there's ways to maneuver and work this thing out at the beginning of the contract. Give yourself a potential out, you know, 4 or 3 years down the line where you can avoid that massive cap hit to your team.
It's Hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey, brought to you by Car Toys. Right now, I got three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 12 after 12, Tom Wassel's burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
Enough with the "we got to protect the kids" nonsense.
Now, we're only a couple of days into Mariners spring training, but whether it's the Mariners or the Seahawks, can you guys help yourselves from getting excited about a young player who just has a monster preseason? Whether it's August training camp or March spring training, you see a flash from a couple of guys. Can you help yourself from being like, all right, that's the guy?
No. I think that's the fun part
Jake
about
certainly
it.
Is can't.
You get excited about these guys because you see the potential. You see the flash. You see the opportunity for growth. You see potentially what their future can be. And you're just hoping that they can realize that as they get into the regular season. And so obviously it doesn't always translate, and it depends on the competition that they're going against and all of that. I firmly understand it. But as fans, we love to have that sense of hope, and we love to have that sense of, hey, here's the next part of the future. And I think that that's the exciting thing. I think that's why DK Metcalf was such a fun, interesting conversation last year, because people were so excited about the potential of what this guy could be, what he couldn't be. And once he showed the flashes of potential, people were all
in. Yeah, on occasion, those guys actually hit.
That's exactly what I was going to say, and that's what makes it so
tricky.
Is No. I'm so glad you guys said that, because that's exactly what it is. It's every single training camp I've been to, and people that have been at training camps far longer than I say the same thing, that there is always a guy, especially a receiver, because you can't hit, you don't have the same contact rules that you do through most of the offseason. At least until you get to padded practice. And even then, it's like you aren't going to go full speed on someone. So you're going to have especially receivers, maybe even a running back that just stands out. And how many times have we talked about that guy in Seahawks training camp and said, oh, this guy looks great. And sometimes that just does not pan out and it doesn't work out. And then other times, like it did with DK Metcalf, DK Metcalf looked like a star in training camp. And people were saying, well, you know, what's he going to look like when he has to beat out a DB? Or what's he going to look like, you know, when he actually has to outrace someone? Turns out he looks pretty good still. So I think because sometimes it does pan out, there's always a little bit of intrigue, a little bit of a nugget there that you think, well, maybe. Let's wait and see what week one, week two looks like for this guy.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Wasn't Frank Clark that guy in his first year? Didn't he have a
it looked
big,
good
didn't he have a big preseason and then he kind of disappeared in the regular season, and then he came back and he got better and
better?
Well,
part of it, too, he was playing behind Cliff Averill for the first part of his career. So his career year that he had with those 14 and a half sacks, guys, correct me if I'm wrong, wasn't that the year his first kind of full-time starting role was when he had all of those sacks?
Yes.
He hadn't started a full season before then, not due to injury, but because he was in the rotation.
Yes. And so, yeah, you're right, Tom. That comes back to that LJ Collier conversation that we had. A guy like Frank Clark, he showed flashes. He showed twitch. He showed all those things that gave you hope and optimism moving forward.
By the way, what?
I'm just laughing.
Tom's giving me a wry smile.
If you're watching the video stream, 710sports.com, Tom has his hand up to signal to Curtis, okay, we're going to our next question. Jake brings up the conversation from yesterday, and Tom moves his hand to his hip. And it's just, really? Really, Jake? We're going to get back to this?
By the way, I put up a piece at 710sports.com last night addressing that very issue, and I quoted you.
You did?
Well, just briefly, because you've used this word flash over and over again, and because I think that's the best way to refer to what you're talking about. When a guy shows flash early in his career, it's an important thing to note, especially if the guy doesn't show flash.
I can't wait for someone to tweet at you, I'm with Jake. We've seen a lot of flashes from Collier.
Spare me. Next.
Number two.
Which position groups, or just positions, are the combine drills most important to?
This is a great question.
Really? I thought it was the worst of all my questions.
Can I guess?
Really? You thought it was the worst one? I think this is an interesting
receivers?
One because, look, receivers... Those drills are important. Really what they want to see is they want to see fluidity. They want to see how fluid of an athlete you are, how you take coaching. So I would say that every single position has important drills, has important aspects that they go through, because really that's what they're trying to identify. They're trying to find out who are the good players but the stiff athletes. And typically when you're stiff, you don't have great bend to you, you don't have great mobility or explosion in and out of your breaks. It isn't going to translate to the NFL most often. And that's why DK Metcalf got smoked for his bad three-cone drill, because typically if you are so stiff and have that such a difference in your ability to cut, stop, and start, that doesn't usually translate to a great receiver or a great athlete that can succeed at the NFL level. But I would say the guys who can make the most money based off of the drills that they do are the DBs, and I would say the quarterbacks. The quarterbacks, it's not the, you know, they don't really do a whole lot of drill work, but they throw. And I think that there's guys out there that have a great opportunity in the combine to start their campaign now. Mm. They've got the tape, but it's really what they look like in person that can really start the campaign. And one guy that I point to, and we've talked about him a lot, Brock Heward and I have a major bet on this, is Jacob Eason. Jacob Eason can start his first round campaign tonight with a really good combine performance, showing all his physical tools off in a way that other guys around him just simply can't. You see him and Jake Fromm throw, there better be a very clear separation between the two in terms of their talent. I think there will be.
Anything to add?
No, I was going to start quizzing Jake on the least important combine drills for each position group, and the only one I could think of would be the 40 time for an offensive lineman or like defensive tackle, where it's like, oh, I'm sorry, he's not a sub 4.5, get him out of here.
But they do it on occasion, don't they?
No, they do. I mean, pretty much everyone does.
Do they do all drills?
Yeah,
does everybody there do all drills?
Well, yeah, it's kind of
they do all drill. They do all testing. So there's testing, and then there's position drills, right? So those two are different.
Right, you're not going to make a D tackle run wide receiver,
or will you?
Correct.
I don't know.
No,
I
want to
see
won't.
His feet.
No, you won't.
Don't
see those
scare me like that. I don't want to watch
What's
that
wingspan?
Next.
Number three.
All right, this is the other part of what I put up on 710sports.com. Can Chris Carson be relied on to shoulder a 17-game season essentially by himself. The question, another way of asking this question is, do they need to draft another big-time running back?
Well, hopefully they can draft another big-time running back, but hopefully you're not having to do it with huge capital. I think that's the crucial element of this is, you know, you were able to find Chris Carson in the seventh round. You were able to find guys in the past that could be good players for you later in the rounds, and I think that's what they have to do because there's more pressing needs for them at this time. They can find cheaper options in free agency to fill that role of the second running back. But if you're going to draft a guy, you got to do it in the later rounds, a guy that you feel has a tremendous, tremendous ceiling fitting into your system and is not just a guy that you think can play special teams for you. There's a difference between the draft of Chris Carson and Travis Homer. Travis Homer, the first thing that they said about Travis Homer, man, this guy can play special teams. This guy is a special, special guy when it comes to his toughness and his willingness to do whatever it takes to get on the field. Chris Carson, when they drafted him, it was all about his skill as a running back. They've got to try and find somebody like that for them to really feel, for me to really feel comfortable about this group going into camp, because as of right now, you've got Chris Carson, you got Travis Homer, that's it, because the reality is Rashad Penny just isn't going to be there for you half the season. I really, truly believe
that. Yeah, they're hanging by a thread.
Yeah, I'm a little more hesitant than is Kyle Brown, who's not here to defend himself, to call Chris Carson just an incredibly kind of snake-bitten player, because he I know that he didn't ultimately, but he came very close to a full season in his third year. His first year, freak accident, fourth game, like you weren't considered to be a starter. You kind of surprised people through camp and into the season. And then I think that he, for the most part, did that role in a position that does take a beating. And so would I put it all on one running back in a run-first offense? If I'm the Seahawks and I'm running the ball, let's say last year, 48% of the time, which is a lot more than other teams. If I'm running the ball that often, I probably want to share that load, and I want to make sure someone else has it. So would I expect one guy, especially a very physical runner, to go through 17 games like that? That's a lot to ask, but I don't think Chris Carson absolutely needs someone to take 50% of the workload, or he'll suffer another injury.
It doesn't have to be 50% of the workload. I mean, and really, the worst part about last year was the timing. The timing was unfortunate that it happened right before the
playoffs. And you lost three guys in 2 weeks.
Yeah, exactly. So just bad luck. We're going to have Mike Salk in here next. I know he's not a big proponent of adding to the offense. He thinks everything's great already. So we'll ask him about that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Rost.
Hey, Mikey.
Hey, guys.
How you doing? This is our Friday, by the way. There's a Mariner game tomorrow, so get your fill.
So you guys are essentially already on vacation for the weekend.
That's exactly right.
We're already checked out.
Thursday at 12:30.
Yep.
Yeah, we're talking nonsense. Now, I have a tendency sometimes to mischaracterize what you say on the air. I apologize ahead of time.
Appreciate that.
We're just talking about how we need another running back next year.
Yeah.
Agree, disagree, and how badly?
They don't need another running.
You don't
back.
Think they're hanging by a thread right now?
No.
Rashad Penny probably isn't going to be back until halfway through the season.
Is that true? I thought he was going to be ready.
No, wait. Why'd you think that?
I don't know. I just did. No, I was the impression that he would be ready.
So Pete Carroll was asked during the combine interview if he'd be ready for the start of the season, and his answer was, it would be miraculous if he was ready at the start of training camp, which is a very interesting way to answer.
Yeah, but I thought he was going to be ready by somewhere near the beginning of the season.
I think that there's a good chance he could be on the PUP list to start the season.
All right. You know, could they use another one? Sure. Do they need to spend valuable resources on it? Not in my book. I mean, I don't see that as being a priority for them. They do need to be able to run the ball, clearly. Could that mean they start the year with Marshawn Lynch again? As fun as it was, I don't know that I'd be looking to sign up for another round of that. I think it just becomes a circus that you don't really need. Obviously, I love Chris Carson, kind of what he brings to the table. But after that, I think that they have so many other needs, especially on the defense, that I just don't want to see them spending big-time resources on a running back. Do you find one in the late rounds of the draft? Sure. Do you find a cheaper cast-off? I mean, do you find whoever's the best XFL running back and bring him? What's the guy's name? Artis Gilmore, who played against the Dragons last week?
He's a basketball player.
Oh, Artis Payne. What's his name?
Curtis Payne?
Sure.
Cameron Artis Payne.
That guy. I mean, whatever. Like, I think you can bring in somebody like that and I think kind of get your fill. I don't think they need to be spending resources there, even if they need to fill the spots.
Salk, what do you think, how imperative is signing back Jadeveon Clowney here to Seattle? Because as we talk about getting closer to free agency, Clowney has said, yes, I would like to play in Seattle, but I am open to other opportunities. How imperative is it for this group, and what is that number for you if you're GM, if you're Matt Thomas, and you're sitting there going, all right, here is my number. I am not going over this number.
Signing Jadeveon Clowney is the easiest way to achieve what you want. It might not be the best way. So what they need is an effective defensive line, edge rushing, pass rush game. They don't have that right now. There are a bunch of ways to achieve that. You can spend crazy money on Jadeveon Clowney and spend something else on another lesser player and draft somebody for the position. Or you can let Clowney go and put more pressure on yourself to go get multiple players who can fill his spot. I'm okay with either one. I don't really care who the players are that end up filling that spot as long as they end up doing it and making it better than it was a year ago. If you let Clowney go, he'll be a, what, day one, day two free agency guy, certainly wave one, however long that takes. You were putting a lot of pressure on yourself to make sure you get multiple other guys. If they feel comfortable with that, I'm okay with it too. What the risk factor is, if you let Clowney go and then you don't get at least two guys to replace him, you're worse, which is, I mean, hard to I mean, honestly, if they lose Clowney and don't replace him adequately, they're not a contender. I mean, it's that significant a difference. I mean, right now with him last year, they were a borderline contender at the end of the year. Without him, with no pass rush improvement, you're a non-contender.
That's why you need another running back.
No, you don't. You get Curtis Artis Payne.
But isn't that part of why people spend so much in free agency and get those guys is because it's less of a gamble? You know for a fact this guy's a starting, not just a starting caliber player, but a Pro Bowler, oftentimes an All-Pro, and maybe another team just couldn't pay enough to keep him. In Jadeveon Clowney's case, his former team franchise tagged him. Seattle agreed not to. Who knows if they would have had they not agreed to do that. So he had no choice but to hit free agency. But, I mean, I think the worry for a lot of fans is that you'll hit free agency, look for someone. It doesn't pan out. Maybe you can't keep Clowney. So you go to the draft to try to find your Leo rusher, the guy that you want to play that role. And then you have to wait for him to develop if he's not an immediate starter. And Russell Wilson, by the time he's ready, is 34.
It's a huge risk factor. It's why you got to get some of it done in free agency. I would take you back to the offseason after the 2012 regular season. The Seahawks in that year already had Chris Clemens and Bruce Irvin to rush the passer. And their number one priority was to get not one but two pass rushers. If they currently had, I mean, they're not close to having it.
Right.
They'd kill right now for Chris Clemens and Bruce Irvin at that time to come rush the passer. They'd kill for that.
Think about it.
And they don't have it. Right? And then that year, it was still the number one priority to get two guys who ended up being Bennett and Averill, who could both be added to Clemens and Irvin. Think about what you're not close to that. And that is where you need to be if you want to get to back to another Super Bowl.
I'll just add to that they didn't really need much else.
True.
They had everything in their secondary. Yeah. They were pretty – actually, they drafted Bobby Wagner that year.
No, they'd already
had
Bobby.
Before, right.
He came with Russ.
So they're pretty good at linebacker already there. So, I mean, that's really all they did need.
That's all they needed. And they went out and they got two. But think about it. That's how far away their pass rush is right now. That at that point they had two and they added two. Right now, without Clowney, you have zero.
Right.
And we need to add at least two, if not three or four, to get to really where you want to be in terms of an elite pass rushing team.
And your defensive line depth in general. We talk about, forget about pass rushers for a second. You talk about the interior. They had Brandon Mebane. They had Red Bryant. I mean, they had all sorts of guys. And their fifth pass rusher, Schofield, he was a O'Brien Schofield was a guy who, you know, you didn't really know anything about, but could still get after the passer. I mean, they were an unbelievable group and deep group at that position, and to see where they are currently.
They have
Kenny
Ford and Naz Jones.
Where they, yeah, they've got Rasheem Green, Naz Jones, Puna Ford, and they've got L.J. Collier. That's who they have on their roster right now. So to fill that out.
That's McDaniels and McDonald and some of the guys that ended in Mebane you mentioned. I mean, that's a big difference. We talked just about the guys on the edge, but you're right. The guys up front, there were more than just pluggers. There were some pretty legitimate players.
This hour of Tom, Jake, and Stacey is brought to you by Car Toys. Over to baseball, Mike.
Yeah.
Have you noticed how frequently the Astros are getting hit by pitches?
Yeah, now they haven't exactly been getting drilled by pitches.
No, I know.
Right? There's one grazed a foot and one was a little, you know, junk
spring
slider.
Training. Gotta just practice.
Right, they're not warmed up yet.
Yeah, exactly.
I don't have command.
Okay. My question is this, though. Is there a point where that kind of retaliation is going to get old?
Yes. I think
is it sooner than later?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that, you know, the way these things tend to get built up, like the beginning of a wrestling match or something, and then they always kind of fizzle out. Because, well, how many times can you really throw at somebody? Like,
well,
are you just
going
to do it over and over and over again?
Is it a question of every team being able to do it, or is it just one or two guys?
we're gonna make them take 30 bean balls.
Seriously. Or maybe. Does everybody become aware of the fact that these guys have been hit, and it's like, okay, I'm Marco Gonzalez. I've seen everybody else do it. I don't need to do it myself.
I think the guys who are most upset will still take an opportunity to do it, and everyone else will say, all right, that guy got him for me. Like, you know, what am I going to do? Just keep drilling people and get suspended myself? I'm in my own pennant chase. I don't have the ability to do that every game. I think you're right.
You're not talking about the Mariners.
I think it's whoever. No, pennant chase?
No.
No, I wasn't. No. Not what I was talking about. Did you hear Kyle Lewis this morning with Danny and Paul?
Yeah,
that kid's
I did,
great.
Actually.
He is such a, just listening to him talk, I certainly am rooting for him. I mean, we were there, we saw him last year, and I hit a couple of home runs. His defense was not quite ready for prime time yet. But,
oh, come on.
He's talking about spring training in September.
He was hitting dingers. No, when he came up in September.
Okay.
His defense was an atrocity, but he really crushed the ball. He was stinging line drives and home runs. God, I'm rooting for him. I just listening to him talk and the way he presents and carries himself. This whole group with him and I know they had Julio Rodriguez on and what a cool little group of people that I find myself so invested in their success. They have a lot more personality than the James Paxton, Kyle Seager, Dustin Ackley group did, which is essentially zero. This group's got a little bit. I mean, obviously Kelnick's got some attitude to him. They're making it a whole lot easier for me anyway to kind of jump aboard what they're capable of.
I agree with you, and I find myself, as we're talking about this, and Tom actually brought this up, how do you find yourself getting more hopeful about guys that have great preseasons and spring trainings and all
that?
I fall into that same category, but I just dream, okay? I'm a dreamer here for a second, and then I snap back to reality, but you've got a former first-rounder in Kyle Lewis. You've got some pretty good talent in Kelnick and Julio Rodriguez. Mm-hmm. Like you look at Jake Fraley and J.P. Crawford, some of these young guys, and it's not to say that they're going to be a special team this year or next year, but like if those guys pan out, they could have a really cool and fun nucleus between all of those guys.
Quickly, Mike, we need to think about another music podcast.
You guys didn't say anything about my recommendations for you.
Who was that? Toto?
Toto and Limp Bizkit.
Toto's pretty much got three songs, and once we cover it, I think it's going to be a very short podcast.
I thought they have more than one?
I mean, they got Africa, they got Rosanna, and they got Hold the Line, and then after that, I think it's...
They didn't even acknowledge Limp Bizkit.
They didn't? That's so rude.
Limp Bizkit? I could probably name at least five or six Limp Bizkit
this
songs.
This is a family station.
Yeah, we could go some rap core from the late 90s, early 2000s.
I think we need to just keep on going.
Well, here's what
Rush,
I think.
Personally.
I thought about it. Yes, we could do more Rush. We could also do like a specific era or grouping of artists together with the recognition that none of them deserve quite the same treatment that Rush got.
Why don't you do the best artists from like 1990 to 95.
Will
the Sneaker Pimps be on there or not?
I don't know what that is, but they seem like nice young men.
Look them up.
All right, we'll think about it.
See you guys.
We'll come back next. We'll continue this conversation about what the Seahawks need next year. 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
Coming up at the top of the hour, Jake Heaps has a problem. Yo, I'll solve it.
I don't get it.
No, you don't get that. Always. Everybody else does. You don't get that.
What is it?
Actually, these two don't get it.
Is it the sneaker pimps again?
If you got a problem, yo, I'll solve it. Check out the beat while the DJ revolves it.
Yes.
Ice, ice, baby.
Oh,
dun, dun, dun,
no.
Dun, 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 dun. Anyway, Jake's got a problem. We'll solve it coming up at the top of the hour. But right now, something Stacey and I were just discussing, Jake, while you were out of the room in the break there. This offseason and fixing the pass rush doesn't just come down, unfortunately, to signing or re-signing Jadeveon Clowney. Like, when that day comes, let's just say it comes, they pay him the money that he wants. Sure, we can rejoice, but the problems are not solved at that point. Like Mike was just saying there when he was in here, between 2012 and 13, they already had pieces here. They just tacked on Cliff Averill and Michael Bennett and then some to make that pass rush dominant. If they get Jadeveon Clowney here, I think that all that's doing is returning them to where they already were.
Well, it's a good point, but it's returning them to where they were because they're also potentially losing like another three or four guys along the defensive line. And it's almost like they're just in a bit of a hole. So no matter what, you're out of luck. If you let Clowney go, yeah, you save money that you have to sign free agents, but you have no idea if the cheaper free agents that you're signing are going to be as effective. If you go just into the draft, you have no idea whether those guys are going to pan out because all of those guys are untested commodities.
Right, if you add
Clowney, you're getting a premier pass rusher that you would not have a chance at in the draft. You are not going to get a chance at someone that has the talent, unless it's kind of like a hidden gem. You're not going to get a chance at someone that has the talent that Jadeveon Clowney has. He's a former number one overall pick, was the first former number one overall pick ever to suit up for the Seahawks, and you're not going to have a chance at someone with that talent in this year's draft. So you're going to pay a lot to get him from in the next 3-4 years. But yes, you're still going to have holes. So no matter what, you're out of luck. Even if you get a proven commodity, now you're spending a lot of money and you still need help.
The interesting part about what Salk said in the last segment was that if you don't sign Clowney, you do not adequately replace him, okay, because everybody's saying, okay, if you don't get Clowney, then you can sign two pass rushers, but you still run the risk of those guys not panning out potentially. If you don't solve this problem, you're not getting back to the Super Bowl. Our blueprint that we have, we could come up with the greatest blueprint, and we spent a lot of time on this blueprint, who they need to sign, what do they need to do in the draft, this, that, and the other. But if they don't solve the defensive line problem, they are not getting back to the Super Bowl. And that is a huge reality of this. And that's why this situation with Clowney is so important to really figure out and to have the appropriate plan A and plan B. Because now once you sign Clowney, Tom, as you mentioned, okay, you still, at that point, you only have Clowney, LJ Collier, Rasheem Green, Naj Jones, and Puna Ford under contract here in Seattle. On your defensive line. That is clearly not good enough.
And then you got to make a decision about wanting to upgrade or pay Jaren Reed. I mean, you may have to pay more for the guy who replaces him. Sometimes it's not a question of, all right, how much do I want to spend on this guy? It's that becomes irrelevant because I need a better player than him anyway.
Right.
Right. Is Jaren Reed, as we're rebuilding this defensive line, is Jaren Reed good enough to make this a Super Bowl contending defensive line if he plays the way he did last year?
I think that
in 2019,
there's a good chance he could have better numbers than he did last year because he still missed 6 games.
Yeah.
But in 2019, you asked that question. The answer is clearly no. He would not help this team get to a Super Bowl if he played the way he did in 2019. We are all hoping that Jaren Reed is more of the player in 2018 than he was in 19. That guy that we saw in 18, he could definitely help you get to a Super Bowl.
Would you like to see a line? But tell me if you think we can get to the Super Bowl with this.
Okay.
Jadeveon Clowney, LJ Collier, Jaren Reed, and X on the other side.
Well, that X would probably be Rasheem Green, right? Or are you saying that
that's another free agent
acquisition?
Let's say it's a big-time free agent.
Okay, then yeah, I would feel more comfortable with that because your pass rush now gets into a more comfortable situation. Now you're starting to feel a little bit better, and then you're more hopeful that, hey, with Rasheem Green and LJ Collier being rotational players
right.
and playing in that role and not being relied upon as being a frontline guy, yeah, I feel a lot more comfortable in that situation. But if it's Clowney and then Rasheem Green and LJ Collier, that's too much of an unknown for me. I don't think you're going to get the production you need. So that's where they have to.
And that's a lot of money to be spent, by the way, just on one position.
Well, and is Clowney going to want to come here and once again have the burden of kind of shouldering the entire defense?
But he wouldn't in this scenario if he went out and paid another free agent on the other side.
Yeah, you just have to think about how much you were paying, because then you'd have 20. Let's say it's $23 million going to Clowney. Maybe the cap is a $20 million hit in 2020. So then you're down to about $40 million in cap space. $39 million.
Spend it. Spend it.
Hey, C-Rodge, real quick, could you find the Pete Carroll clip of him talking about Clowney and, you know, kind of where they would be at in terms of, you know, the cap situation with him? Or that in free agency they might not have as much cap space as possible, because if you know, we come back to that, to me it's interesting because a lot of people have signified that as, okay, he now, because they don't have as much cap room as they may think, that there's a number there that the Seahawks don't want to cross. They don't want to, you know, go over the threshold with Clowney. To me, there's a potential that that could mean something completely different, that Pete Carroll could be talking about something entirely different.
All right, we'll come back and we'll hear that next. 710 ESPN Seattle.